Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mehler. Mary Mellum is my guest, back with us once again to talk about filing your tax returns, the 2019 returns. Mary's business is at Schwabenen Tax Professionals. She and her husband, David, have been in the tax business for more than 30 years. They serve people like us. They consult to tax professionals. They teach tax seminars around the country. So she knows a lot, and if you have a question, I hope you'll join in. What questions do you have about filing your taxes? Call us at 1-800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. And Mary Mellum, thanks for joining us once again.
You're welcome, Larry.
So some of the tax forms are going to look different again this year, and I was online looking at the W-4 forms. Why has that changed?
The basis for the old W-4 forms were exemption amounts, and technically they were tied to the dollar amount that represented an exemption, and we no longer have exemptions as of the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act of 2017. So last year, they proposed changing the W-4 and kind of let us get used to the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act before they went to the dramatic change that they have now.
So do all employers have to use this new form?
All employers have to use the new form for new employees, or for any current employee who wants to change their withholding.
Okay.
It is not a mandate that every employee has to change to this new W-4. If they're happy with the withholding that they currently have, the W-4 that they signed prior to 1-1 of 2020 will still suffice.
Okay. All right. What about the new form that's available for those who are 65 or over? What's that? Or older? What's that like?
The only thing that that new 1040SR accomplishes is bigger print.
Ah.
It is exactly the same two-page form, other than they have the standard deduction is on the bottom of that form instead of on the side where it is on the other form, but there are no different lines. There's only bigger print.
And so if you're over 65, you don't necessarily have to use this form.
The other form, the 1040, will be fine. It's the generic. I mean, it's the generic form. The print is a little bit smaller, but that's the only difference.
Oh.
You're not forced to use the SR just because of age. And I don't know. The instructions tell you that you use it if you're 65 or older, or you can use it. But maybe there's people younger that would rather use it because of the bigger print. It depends on what your situation is. But I don't see any real benefit to it unless you have a need for bigger print.
All right. You know, last year, I think there were six schedules to choose from. This year, they're down to they've combined them into three.
That's correct. They got rid of Schedule 6, which was only if you lived in a foreign country or you wanted to appoint someone other than your tax professional as a third-party designee. So they totally eliminated that schedule. And then Schedules 4 and 5 were integrated into Schedule 2 and Schedule 3 because one deals with taxes and the other deals with payments and credits.
Okay, so it may solve some problems or make it a little simpler for people?
It's less pages that you have to have.
I know the
If you're filling out your return, unlike the 2017 version where all of the lines were on page 1 and 2, all they did is take those lines that were on page 1 and 2 and put them on the schedules. And then those schedules feed back into the form where the lines used to be under the old regime.
Okay. I know the standard deduction has slightly increased this year. That's usually
about $200 for the single person, so it's $12,200, and for the married couple, it's $24,400.
Okay. I wonder sometimes how they determine that amount. Do you know how they go about that?
The change in the amount that adjusts each year, it's based on the Consumer Price Index, but in the 2017 Act, they linked it to the chained Consumer Price Index, which means it goes up slower than it used to.
Oh, okay. Well, we have callers online. And by the way, you can join in, too, if you have a tax question. The number is 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email at ideas@wpr.org. Let's take a call from Dan in West Bend. Hi, Dan.
Hi. My mother lives in a nursing facility, and she pays for it out of pocket. I wondered how much, if any, is that write-offable?
By your mother?
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Dan, is this a full nursing home or is it assisted living?
Full nursing home.
In a full nursing home, she's there, I'm assuming, because of a medical necessity, doctor's orders, that kind of thing.
Yes.
And if that is true, it is the full cost of the medical, the full cost of the nursing home would be a medical expense. Now, if...
Okay, there's no percentage or anything?
No. Well, it is an itemized deduction, and the itemized deductions are subject to 7.5% of your adjusted gross income. But for someone who is living in a nursing home, the cost is pretty high. And usually with the cost of living in a nursing home, you're going to itemize your deductions unless you have such high income that, you know, your income would be so high that 7.5% of your income would be more than what you're spending at the nursing home.
Yeah.
So that means it would have to be a pretty, you know, $1 million income or something substantial like that.
All right.
So itemized deductions are what you want to look at. And if the cost of the nursing home is somewhere, if she's there all year, I'm guessing it's a minimum of $36,000 for the year. And she would get to deduct that minus 7.5% of her adjusted income. And that, for a single person, the standard deduction would be $12,000, plus she gets an additional for being over 65.
Hmm.
Does that help?
Dan, does that help?
That does. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much for calling. I appreciate your call. You can join in, too, 800-642-1234. Give a call. Nancy in Wonder Lake, Illinois, it's your turn.
Good morning, Mary. I have a question about filing online. And is there, like, a married couple filing online and as far as, like, signing it? Because I just want to make sure everything's correct, and it doesn't seem like it needs a signature because my husband does that usually.
The signature online filing, it's like an electronic signature. For a professional, we file online. We're mandated to do that. And the form we have, it's called an 8879 form, which is a signature form that we have clients sign, and we keep that copy here that says, I, the client, gave you permission to electronically file my return. So if you're doing it yourself, you certainly don't have to give yourself the
permission
for it. So it's kind of like an electronic signature to the IRS.
As far as, like, the assisted living write-off, because we have that situation as well, but it's not nursing home, it's assisted living.
It depends on the reason for being in assisted living. If it is medically
partially blind, and almost 100 years old, so,
Like I say, there is certain tasks of daily living that, like eating, toileting, dressing, transferring, I think there might be one more, that if a person cannot perform two of those on their own, they're considered chronically ill, and that is basis for being in assisted living. And if that's the case, then they're able to take the cost of the assisted living. Now, one of the things that I didn't mention the last time, if you're paying for extra services like haircuts and, you know, specialty items, those have to be taken off of it. It's the medical care, the living there, the food that goes along with it. That's included in the normal medical expenses.
Mm-hmm. Nancy, does that help?
Yes, it helps a whole lot. And if you're, like, we're at that point, too, where taxes are instrumental, where do you find a good tax, not attorney, but filer, someone that can do your taxes with?
The IRS has a website of people, and there is that. There are tax organizations that professionals belong to, like the National Association of Tax Professionals or the National Association of Enrolled Agents. They have websites that contain names that you can Google that and find people in your area that belong to those organizations, thus tend to keep up on the changes in laws and things like that, or have special designations.
Kind of always like the professional organizations for a variety of reasons, whether it be tax preparation or anything else, just because there is a kind of code of ethics typically as well, and a certain amount of updating that has to take place if you're a member of that professional organization. So something like the National Association of Professional Tax Preparers, you have some ability to think, okay, here's somebody who actually knows what they're doing and keeps up with it.
Let me just give you a couple of websites. It's natptax.com or NAEA.org are two professional organizations that have members, as Larry has described.
So the first one was
NATP, National Association of Tax Professionals.
.com.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Or NAEA.org.
The other is NATP, the word tax.com.
Oh. NATPtax.com.
Correct.
Oh, okay. There we go. Nancy, that help?
Yes. Thank you so much, Larry.
Yeah, appreciate it. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email at ideas@WPR.org. Mary Mellum, our guest today, she and her husband David operate Ashwaubenon Tax Professionals. Great to have Mary back with us once again, and great to have Nigel O'Shea as our engineer. Jill Nadeau is our producer. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Taking a look at your taxes now with our guest, Mary Mellum of Ashwaubenon Tax Professionals. I'm Larry Mueller. Thanks for joining in. Robin in Portage has a question, Mary. Let's go there. Hi, Robin.
Hi. Thanks for taking my question. Last year when I had my taxes done, medical expenses were not allowed. And what I'm speaking of for medical expenses, which had been previously, was transportation, prescriptions, cost of insurance premiums. And there's one more, I think, but I can't think of it. At least those three. What is it going to be, are medical expenses allowed this year or never again?
Robin, I think the analogy is incorrect. Medical expenses are allowed. All of the ones that you mentioned are allowed as itemized deductions. But what some people feel that they're not allowed is because they don't have enough income to itemize. So there's a couple of steps. First of all, you have to have medical expenses in excess of 7.5% of your adjusted gross income. That's the first step. The second step is that in order for that to benefit you, you have to be able to itemize, which means that you get over the standard deduction, which for a single person is $12,200 for this year, or a married couple, $24,400. And if you don't get over that, then your standard deduction is better. So it's not saying that medical aren't allowed. It just might not benefit you in your situation. But there is one other thing that I want to mention. If you are paying medical expenses, medical premiums, it is a deduction on the Wisconsin return, regardless of whether you itemize on federal or not. So I think there's some kind of misinterpretation that you had of those rules.
So just so that I have this right, so if you're paying insurance, medical insurance, you can't.
You are paying out of your pocket.
Yeah, out of your pocket.
Through your employer, that's being deducted from your check.
Oh, if it's being deducted from your check, it doesn't count?
Most employers have pre-taxed medical, so it's not included in your income when they deduct it.
Gotcha.
So it's pre-taxed medical insurance. You're not paying taxes on it, so you're not going to get another deduction for it. But for people who are on Medicare, they are paying it through their Social Security premium or Social Security benefits generally. They get the net of it, therefore it's really come out of their pocket. Or someone else, self-employed people, you know, there are places where you might be paying it or just because you're paying it on your own.
Yeah. So Medicare, if you're paying that out of your own pocket, you can deduct that as a medical expense.
It's a medical expense plus in addition, Wisconsin has a separate deduction that you don't need to itemize to get that deduction.
Gotcha. All right. Robin, does that help?
Now, I have one last question. I didn't quite get the $12,000 for a single person. Is that gross amount?
$12,000 is just a number. It's called the standard deduction. And every single person gets to subtract that from their total income before coming up with the tax due.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Robin, for calling. Appreciate it. Good information there. Mike in Green Bay, your turn.
Yeah. Just let me get this off the speaker. Yeah. Anyhow, on the new W-4, just an observation, because I just went through that drill with my wife, who is very experienced in payroll issues. It is extremely confusing, particularly if you have dual incomes. So a couple of things. If both of you are working, you need to know how much both of you are making if you want to fully fill out that form. And the other one is take a patience pill, because probably 95% of the payroll processing people are not aware of how to handle this new form. The IRS did a horrible job on alerting people on these changes.
Oh. Mary?
I'd like to address that a little bit.
Yeah.
What Mike says is part of this. First of all, if you take a look at the reason or the background of a W-4, first of all, the W-4's purpose is to make you withhold enough to pay your taxes. The new W-4 does that in the sense, and I'm going to start with the single, and then I'll address the married couple. But first of all, if I have nothing but wages, nothing else on my W-2, or I mean on my tax return but wages, if I fill out this W-4 by selecting my filing status on the top, my name, and signing the bottom of the return and filling nothing else out on this return, I will have enough withholding from the chart to pay my tax, because that's the way it's set up. In the old W-4s, we selected 0 to any number of withholding, and there was a different number of withholding for each of that. The IRS's analogy or idea here is we want to make sure that people have enough money to pay their taxes in this. So if I am a married couple and there is only one person working, the analogy should be the same, that if I fill out step one and step five and let the IRS take out the withholding that is marked for that amount, it's going to cover the tax. It's when things get complicated that you have to use other lines. And most all of us who are filing taxes have something else involved. The something else involved says I get interest, I have investments, things like that. The really simple way of filling this out, first of all, if you're a single person, is to do step one and step five and figure out what the additional income that you have is, multiply it by the tax rate that you're in, divide that number by the number of payroll periods that you have, theoretically till the end of the year, depending on when you do this, and fill in that amount of extra withholding that you want to cover that extra income on line 4C. If you do that, you will accomplish the same thing that you had last year. Now, there is a part two that is step two that says multiple jobs and spouse that works. What we see is when people under withhold, oftentimes it's a married couple who has one spouse that is the primary person and the other person has a part-time job. The way the old payroll charts were set up, the part-time job had very little withholding on it. So what's done with this now is that if the primary person fills out this step two and asks for extra withholding based on the individual on that other spouse's part-time job, and the steps, there are three different things in this W-4 that say you can do this, this, or that. But it comes down to how much extra tax is owed on the part-time income of the individual. And the instructions say when you figure that out, maybe using one of those three means or just common sense, you fill that in the box 4C for extra withholding. If you understand the analogy of that, this isn't as difficult as seeing it the first time makes it horrendous.
Yep, makes sense. Mike, go ahead. I'm sorry, Mary.
That I want to warn people of. If you want a refund, if you're a family with children, there is another step three that says claim dependents. If you put your dependent number in there, what the employer will do is reduce the withholding that they're taking out of your check by that credit. And for someone who has two children and says, I've got $2,000 credit for each child, if they fill that part in, they're not going to see it. It's going to be a break even. So.
All right. Something to keep in mind for sure. Thanks, Mike. Yep. Appreciate the call. Linda in Eau Claire, it's your turn.
Oh, hello. Good morning. I'm wondering what, if any, is the penalty for failure file a tax return. This is would be for a low-income person, retired, who would likely receive a refund.
For the federal penalty for failure to file a return went up this year, courtesy of the last tax bill that was signed December 20th of 2019. I believe it's $432. However, it is based on 100% of the tax or $432, I believe, whichever is greater. If they do not owe any tax and would get a refund, there isn't a penalty for filing it for federal. However, for the state of Wisconsin, if you file late, whether you have a refund or not, there is a penalty for the state of Wisconsin. I believe it's $50 currently.
So if you don't owe any taxes, but you might have money coming, it's worth your while to fill the forms out.
That is correct.
Yeah, absolutely. Linda, thank you very much for calling. Jane in Madison, your turn. Hi, Jane.
Hi. So my husband has a small business, and he has an accountant to take care of his payroll, the payroll taxes, sales taxes. They're filed quarterly, and then at the end of the year, she does our joint income tax. And every year she's getting later. Last year she completed, in 2019, she completed our 2017 taxes in October. Still has not completed our 2018. So we charge her all the penalty and interest. And this year I want to go to somebody else, but we need our 2018. Is there any legal ramifications I have? Is there anything I can do to kind of prod her into getting this done?
I'm not sure how you can prod her into getting it done. I'm assuming the payroll reports are done on time. Otherwise, yeah, there are penalties and interest for failure to deposit and failure to do those on time. That's separate from the income tax return. If those are done on time and it's the income tax return that's not done, as far as your 2018, you have the legal right to ask for your paperwork, anything that you have brought to her to complete your tax return. You're free to ask for that back and then take it to someone else.
Yeah, but so really there's nothing else I can do. I mean, I've threatened to report her to the Better Business Bureau because she does have a wide client base.
Yeah.
Nothing seems to get her going. Okay.
What I would, from a professional standpoint, I would be asking, why is this happening? Are you waiting for data from me? Is it, you know, do you have too much work? And you're going to have to decide what you want to do from that point.
Yeah. Boy. It's one of those, sometimes you can file a complaint as well with the Wisconsin Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection. And sometimes filing a complaint with Consumer Protection speeds the process up a little bit for people. It's another thing to kind of consider, perhaps. Sorry, Jane, but I do appreciate your call. You can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. Jason in Madison, it's your turn. Hi, Jason.
Hi. The recent tax changes, I caught a break because I don't have to take my RMD until age 72. Now, I turned 72 in October of 2021. So does that mean for filing for 2021, I need to take an RMD? Or do
that
I
is,
get an extra year?
Okay. The rules that Jason is talking about is that as of December 20th, of 2019, we had a new tax bill, the first major tax bill for the year. And in that, there were reforms relating to IRAs. And the RMD, the required minimum distribution, which has been 70.5, applies, has been changed for the year 2020. And in 2020, the rule says that your RMD does not start until, you do not have to start it until age 72. So anyone who turns 72 in the current year, well, in that year, would be taking their RMD. So in 2021, when you turn 72, you are required to take the appropriate amount out of your IRAs or 401ks, if that is your situation, or any other retirement that requires RMDs.
And there's one difference in that, if I'm not mistaken, and that is if you are still working full-time, you do not have to take the RMD.
If you are currently working for an employer related to the retirement plan of that particular employer, you do not have to take it until you retire.
Jason, go ahead.
If I worked for GM, for instance, and I retired from GM and my money is sitting in the 401k at GM, but I decide to go to work for some other company and my retirement's still sitting there and I turn age 72 or I turn 70.5 in 2019, then I would have to still take the GM plan because that's not where I'm currently working. Only the employer that I'm currently working for that allows me to put off taking that RMD. And our RMDs apply to IRAs, the traditional IRAs.
Gotcha. There we go. Jason, I hope that helps.
Yeah. So my balance at the end of 2020 is what I will use to calculate the RMD for 2021, correct?
That is correct. And as of right now, we have a chart that tells you what the divisor of that is. But pay attention because IRS has talked about changing that chart that we currently use. So by the time you get there, they may have changed the chart. So be sure that you are up on the latest chart that is available for computing the RMDs.
What's the basically or approximately how much does a person have to take out? Is it like 3% or 5% of what you have? Or?
Well, let me tell you, at right now, at the age of 70, which for 2019, anyone who turns 70.5 in 2019 had to take it out, and you looked at the balance at the end of 2018 in each account, and you divided that balance by the number 27.4. That was the factor.
Gotcha. All right. Jason, thank you again. Appreciate your call. You can join in too, 800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. Tom in La Crosse. Your turn.
Yes. I was wondering, thank you. Well, thank you for taking my call. My mother passed in November of 2019, and she had real estate and, you know, retirement income and what have you. I was wondering, she would file quarterly. Do we need to file her last quarter for her, or is this something I need to see a tax attorney about?
Okay. First of all, since your mother died in November, she would have a final return for 2019. As far as the quarterly payments that she would have, it depends on if she had more money that would have come after death, you know, that in her normal year she would have received. If one quarter of her income comes in that period of time, you may not need that quarterly estimate. But if she receives more of her income in the earlier part of the year, she might have the same amount of income for the whole year. So it depends. I would strongly advise, if she has any type of income that requires her to file, that you consult with a tax professional for two reasons. Number one, she has a final return to do for her for the part of the year she was alive. And there is, depending on how the estate is set up, there is the potential of an estate form 1041 that is required for income that was received after death. And it is something that if you're not versed in that area, it would be important to see a tax professional. There are all kinds of people who are tax professionals. I certainly am in favor of enrolled agents just because that's a designation that I have and see as important. But there are very good tax professionals, whether they have no letters behind their name or many letters behind their name. Find someone that you feel comfortable with, and I think it's a question that should be taken to a professional.
Yeah, it makes good sense. Tom, do that. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Mary Mellum, tax professional from Green Bay, Wisconsin. She and her husband, David, operate Ashwaubenon Tax Professionals. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Talking about your taxes today with our guest, Mary Mellum, tax professional from Green Bay. She and her husband, David, operate Ashwaubenon Tax Professionals. Great to have her with us once again. She does a wonderful job. I want to give you a chance to join in at 800-642-1234 or email us at ideas@wpr.org. Beverly in Milwaukee up next. Hi, Beverly.
Hello.
Hi, what can we do for you?
Well, I wonder if she can help me. I worked for a daycare last year and in April. I never received the check stub. My boss would pay me in cash, and I asked her, is this okay? And she said, yes, it is. Well, 2 days later, I began to feel ill because I said, I don't think this is right. She didn't take out no Social Security. She didn't take out no state. All I got was direct deposit in the mail, in the bank, but it didn't cover the check that she gave me in cash, you know. And I said, well, where's the check stub in April? You know, she said, oh, the accountant messed up, she said. I said, well, when is he going to straighten it out? She said, he's working on it. Well, that went on for some months. I never received that check stub, so I called the IRS, and they told me never, never, never receive cash money from your boss on the job. So how do I go about getting that check stub?
First of all, were all your checks, every time you were paid by your employer, were you paid in cash?
No, that was the only time in April.
Only one time?
Yeah.
Do you have a record of how much you've received from that employer?
No, she gave it to me in April. She paid me in cash.
Okay, do you still work for her?
No, I no longer work for her because things kept going the wrong way, and I kept saying I had to keep asking her for the check.
Was that cash payment the last check or the last payment that you received from her?
Oh, the last payment that I received from her was in October when I left there. It was direct deposit, but I didn't get a check stub for that one either.
Okay. Based on your other times, did you see Social Security and Medicare and withholding, if that was the case, being taken out of your other checks?
Yeah.
Okay, so there is just one check that you have no record of what was taken out of it or how much it has?
It's two check stubs, the one in April and October.
Yeah.
She did direct deposit in October, but she never mailed me the check stub for October.
Okay. So first of all, you should be getting a W-2 from this employer. And what you want to do is compare what you've received check-wise or your check stubs, compare that to what's on the W-2, because that cash payment should be on that W-2. So there should be a difference between the records that you have or that you know about and what that cash payment is. If the cash pay, if the W-2 amounts add up to what you have for check receipts, then when you file your taxes, you need to add the cash payment to that amount. And IRS does not appreciate people getting cash because sometimes that indicates that people are paying what we call under the table that says, oh, you don't have to report it, which is definitely not true.
Yeah. So you wait for that, form to come from the company, Beverly, and then you're going to have to do some comparison to see how things add up for you, and that's probably the best way to do it. Thank you thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. Well, Pat in Lake Geneva, your turn. Hi, Pat.
How you doing?
Good. Appreciate the call.
This might sound stupid. I'm not sure. I was in a bad accident, but I want to know, am I supposed to file taxes? I get SSI. Am I supposed to do that?
And that's your only source of income?
Yes.
Okay.
Pat, if that's your only source of income, SSI is not a taxable event. And it is SSI, it's not Social Security disability, correct?
Correct.
Okay. So that would not, SSI, Medicaid, would not be a taxable income. And if that's your only source, you may not want, I mean, you don't have to file taxes. If you live in the state of Wisconsin and you are paying property taxes or rent and you have a low income, you may want to file for the homestead credit, and that would be a voluntary thing. You wouldn't be required to do it.
So just the Wisconsin form?
For the homestead, if you pay property taxes or rent, you may qualify for that, and it's a refund under the right situation. So you might want to check that out.
Yeah, good thing to check out.
Pardon me?
That's a good thing to check out for sure, maybe perhaps in Pat's case.
That's right.
We had sort of another one relating to Social Security. Cher in Menominee Falls emailed that her husband will go on Social Security in June, but he wants to keep working. Is there any tax reason he should or should not continue working? Are there earning limitations, for example?
Yes. Social Security, you can certainly, depending on your age, if you have retired early, like age 62, there is a maximum amount of income, earned income, that you can have before you have to give back some of the Social Security. That's not a tax issue, that's an earning issue. When you get to full retirement, you can earn as much as in wages as you want without giving back any of your Social Security benefits. From the tax side, Social Security is a taxable event or goes towards tax, and there are limits depending on your income that maybe none of it's taxable if you have a low enough income. Maybe up to 50% is taxable if you get to the next bracket, and at most, 85% of it is added to your income, depending again on your income, is added to your income for tax purposes.
Mm-hmm. And the full retirement is it still 65?
Full retirement is age 67.
67.
And I believe it is 67 if you are age born in 1960 or later. Full retirement for some people, it's a graduated number. It was raised to 66, and then for different different ages, it goes up by 2 months to get to 67. Okay. So Medicare kicks in at 65. Early retirement, again, depending on your age, starts at 62, and you can get Social Security from 62 on, but it's not the full Social Security.
All right. And again, Pat, thank you. Nancy in Madison, it's your turn. Hi, Nancy.
Yes, I was listening to the age change for the IRA, and my husband in 19 turned 70 and a half, so he had to take out a percentage of his IRA. But he's not going to be 72 until 21, so does that mean he doesn't have to take it out in the year 20?
That's a wonderful question, Nancy, and the answer is he still has to take it out. It is a strange way that the law applies, and the law says if you turn 70 and a half in 19, you must start and continue your RMDs. If you turn, the next age, starting in 2020, if you turn 72, you have to start taking out your money. But people who would turn 72 in 2020 have already been taking it and must continue. So it's going to be the people in 2021 that are going to be the first people that have the age 72 to start taking it out.
Okay.
It's a strange little thing, but if you had to take it out in 19, you must continue.
There you go, Nancy. You got a solid answer there. Let's go to Scott in McQuantico. Hi, Scott.
Hi, how you doing?
Good. Appreciate the call.
I have a question. I'm 67. My only income is Social Security. My wife's 64. She works full-time. That's her only income. That's an easy form to fill out. But during the 2019, I sold some old stock for $4,000. Is there any special forms I need to complete?
If you sold stock, it is the initial place that the stock is reported is on an 8949, which feeds into a Schedule D. It depends on whether the stock is taxable for federal tax purposes depends on your total income. Because if you are in the 12% bracket, and that's the top of it, the bracket that you're taxed at, probably your gain would not be taxable on the long-term capital gain. But again, it depends on what your overall income is and what bracket you're in. So you do have to report it, and it would be ultimately the Schedule D, and whether it's taxable depends on your whole situation. For the state of Wisconsin, it is going to be taxable because they don't have a zero bracket.
Oh. Scott, does that help?
16 years ago, and it's just been sitting there. I know it's gone up, but how do I know how much I paid for the stock?
Did you buy it?
Through my payroll deduction, just, you know, $50 a paycheck or something.
Yep, and to have a basis in it, you have to go back to those records and find out how much you paid, you know, how much you put into it. If you've never taken anything out, if you can go back to those old payroll records or reconstruct those records of how much was taken out per pay period for however long, that's the place you would use to come up with the cost basis. You can ask your employer if they have a separate account where they tracked it. That would be the only other thing.
Okay, because the employer has been bought out a couple times since then, so, and it's 15 years ago, so I don't have any records at all.
Yeah.
then the IRS says if you can't prove your basis is zero, making the whole amount that you sold it for taxable.
Ouch.
I'll have to look. It's not that much, but I guess I'll just have to look and figure out if I can, you know, determine how much I paid.
Yep. See how much you can come up with, because cost basis is an important thing to keep track of when you're buying stock.
For sure. That's a good lesson. Scott, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Well, we're taking a look at your taxes today with our guest, Mary Mellum, tax professional from Green Bay, Wisconsin. Been in the tax business more than 30 years with her husband, Dave. They operate Ashwaubenon Tax Professionals, and they are enrolled agents as well. We are inviting you to join in at 800-642-1234 or email us at ideas@wpr.org. We're going to take a quick look at the news, the weather, find out what else is in store for us, and then we'll be back with Mary, and she'll be with us right up till 12:30. You stay with us. We'll be back right after this look at the news. Talking about filling out your income taxes on the show today, Larry Mueller here with Mary Mellum of Ashwaubenon Tax Professionals of Green Bay, back with us once again. She and David, her husband, own Ashwaubenon Tax Professionals. They've been doing it for 30 years. They consult individuals, other tax professionals. They teach tax seminars around the country. Questions for her? Give a call at 1-800-642-1234, email at ideas@wpr.org. And Mary, we have caller Carol from Oak Creek, so let's go there. Hi, Carol.
Yes, good morning. Yes, I have a question. I'm retired, and I've been retired for many years, and I haven't paid any taxes, of course. I do have a small part-time job now, and they insist on taking money off for taxes. Is there any form or any procedure I can follow so they don't do that?
Even with the taxes that they take out, you still wouldn't qualify for?
Yes, right. I still wouldn't pay taxes.
Carol, if you fill out the new W-4 and fill out Part 1, sign it in Part 5, the taxes taken out should be based on your income, and if that's the case, they wouldn't be taking any out.
Okay, I will look into that. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, Carol. Don in Central Wisconsin, your turn.
Yeah, hi, Larry. How are you doing?
Good. Appreciate the call. What can we do for you?
I've got a problem that's been nagging at me for 18 years. In 2000, I took a government contract job overseas. I was told because of the amount of income I was making, none of it would be taxed. And I wouldn't be paying any taxes. I took that as meaning I didn't have to file, which I have found out since that I was supposed to file. I spend a lot of time overseas on different government contracts, and I haven't been able to get this corrected. I stopped into the closest IRS office, and the lady behind the counter did some quick calculations, and she says, well, I've got you at $40,000, and that's only for the first 5 years as how much I owe. I don't have any previous tax information to, you know, rebuild anything. How do I get this cleared or corrected or whatever?
As far as what you're talking about is the foreign earned income exclusion. And there is an exclusion for income earned in a foreign country if you meet certain tests. And some of them have to do with how long you lived there and your tax home and things like that. So if you had met those tests, you still would have had to file a tax return and claim the foreign earned income exclusion. It's a form 2553, I believe is the form number, for the foreign earned income exclusion. And that is how you would do it. Now, you can go back and file those returns, and if you truly didn't owe any money during that time, they would even honor those forms, but you have to fill them out. So the way to get the income, IRS obviously has a record of the income that you made. I don't know what else, you know, you might need there, but if IRS has you down for owing that income, I would say contact a tax professional that does representation, which means that it has to be an enrolled agent, a CPA, or an attorney that works on tax, because they could represent you before the IRS, i.e. they could get a transcript of wage and income for that period and see what the IRS is saying you owe that on that basis. So you're going to, in order to do anything about it, you're going to have to file those tax returns.
Yeah. Sticking back to my, I was away for a year in, on a similar circumstance, but there were restrictions if you worked for the whole year and you didn't come back to the U.S. for more than 2 weeks. There were all kinds of little instructions that allowed you to qualify. You still had to file the form.
There is, the form number is a 2555, not 2553. There is a physical presence test or a bona fide residence test along with a tax home issue that you have to meet to even get there. But one other thing is that even if you couldn't eliminate it based on the foreign earned income exclusion, there's a foreign tax credit if you had paid taxes to the foreign country on that income that might have been able to help you as well. If one didn't work, the other might have.
Yeah. There you go, Don. Thank you very much for calling. Good luck. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too. Open lines get you on pretty quickly here at 1-800-642-1234. Give a call. Janet emailed to say she's currently having some of her required minimum distribution, or RMD, donated to a few charities. Does she need proof from the charity that they received the money as a direct rollover?
What Janet is talking about are qualified charitable distribution, QCD, which allows you to take money from your IRA up to $100,000 a year and go directly from your IRA to the charity. She needs to have a record that it went from her IRA, which the brokers usually are able to give you that, and she needs to have the thank you very much letters from the charity. That is equally as important. Anytime you donate more than $250 to any charity, you need that letter that says they have received it, and by the way, we didn't provide you with any goods and services.
Got it. Okay. Fred emailed that his spouse died this past year. He always does his own taxes without a problem. His income is his pension and their Social Security. His wife's ended upon her death, the Social Security. They took a one-time distribution from his wife's IRA. Will he need professional help, or should he be able to handle it?
Obviously, I'm in this business, so I believe people need professional advice. But here's the situation. If the distribution was taken before his wife died and it was in her name, it would go on their final tax return. And if he gets all the documents showing that, the final tax return would be a joint tax return if that's what they've done in the past. And anything she received before she died is included, and all of his year income is included. And if that's all he's gotten and he's comfortable with doing it, it is a final return, and that would go on there.
And then we've got Tess in Bayfield. Tessa, I'm sorry, emailed that her daughter, who is a full-time student at UW-Madison, received a stipend for a two-month fellowship. Is that money considered taxable income?
Generally, with a fellowship, it is considered kind of like earnings. So it depends on what kind it is. It might be taxable, it might not. So there's more has to be known about it. It's not an answer that you can say just yes or no to it. Assume yes if there is no special programs that allows it to be non-taxable.
Okay. And a listener emailed again about RMDs. They're a married couple with a bank CD IRA of which $30,000 were non-deductible contributions back in the 90s. Okay. The last year they added to the IRA with non-deductible contributions and filled out the 8606 form. They're wondering when they take their RMDs, how do they break down the portion every year? They're 69 years old currently.
Okay. That 8606 form is the form that they use. Whatever non-deductible that they put into any IRAs is spread over all of the monies that they take out. So that form prorates it based on the non-deductibles to the whole. And the 8606 is what you fill out each year to do that.
All right. Let's take another call. Steve in Wausau, it's your turn. Hi, Steve.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Real quick, an annuity I owned went broke, and 3-4 years passed, and all of a sudden I get a letter and a check for $130 saying they finally figured out what everything was owed, bonds and stocks and everything, and this was my interest. And they said everybody that's check was over $600, they sent a 1099 with the check. What do I do with that interest? Where do I put that?
If it is an annuity, if it was interest from the annuity, it would be ordinary income. I would probably put it on the interest line because normally you would get a 1099-R from an annuity. But if you don't have the 1099-R, I wouldn't use the pension line. So I would just put it on the interest line. However, is this $130, if the company went broke, did you have money that you lost as a result of this?
No. Because it was the state of Wisconsin, and it was the Indiana annuity from the state of Indiana or something, but because of it was an insurance company, and I got all my money back.
Okay, then this extra money is ordinary income to you. So I would write the name of the insurance company. If you have other interests that's over $1,500 collectively, you'd have to do a Schedule B, and I would write the name of the insurance company and that dollar amount there because they're saying they're not sending you a 1099.
So, all right, well, thank you. You've been very helpful.
Yeah. For interest.
Yeah.
Yes.
Thank you very much, Steve. Well, Chip in Green Bay, your turn. Hi, Chip.
Yes, hello. Thanks for taking my call. Great show, Larry.
Thank you.
And I appreciate this segment every year. I'm wondering if I'm responsible for the tax penalty on the health care if I did not have health care in 2019.
I am glad that you brought that up because it's a topic we haven't talked about yet. One of the changes this year for 2019 with regard to the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act reduced the penalty for not having health insurance to zero. So the answer to your question is, If you did not have health insurance in 2019, you will pay a penalty equal to zero.
Okay. There you go, Chip. Thank you for calling.
Thank you.
Yeah. Gary in Holton, it's your turn. Hi, Gary.
Hi. Thank you for having me. My father's got a property, a REIT, K-1, and they never send the information on time.
What do you mean on time?
Well, they sent it last year in July.
Okay. They have, and they undoubtedly have extended their tax return. And an extended return, the K-1 is due when the extended return is due. So they're not on time. They're not, the return is not late based on their rules. It's inconvenient for you or for your father, but they're not sending it late. And I'm assuming that that's why it is. Because if it's a partnership return, if it's a 1065 K-1, the partnership is due March 15th, and that's when it would normally be due. But they get a six-month extension, actually five-month extension, that would mean that they have an additional 5 months to send it out to you.
Gary?
Which means that you would have to extend, or your father would have to extend his return to include it all, or else do his return and amend it later.
Well, I think we'll amend it because we've been getting fined for sending it late, as in he has to pay extra. So thank you.
Yeah, thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Jack in Madison, it's your turn. Hi, Jack.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good, appreciate the call.
Thank you. I just have a simple question. I think it's simple, but I just wanted some reassurance. I have a 401k through my employer. Is there any paperwork I have to file with my individual tax return, or does the employer do everything?
Are you still currently working with the employer?
Yeah. I just started.
And have you taken any distributions from the
401k? No, I'm saving it all. No, I don't take any.
The employer takes care of it all. You will see on your W-2 that there is a code D that will show how much you have deferred out of your income. But the employer takes care of all of that, filing the paperwork. And until you start taking it out or leave work, there's probably nothing you have to do other than if you want to change the percentage of deferral that you have.
Maybe, is that right? I mean,
sorry, Jack?
There's nothing you have to do on your tax return.
Okay, and then the same question for, I started an IRA too, an individual retirement account. Do I need to file anything for that with my individual tax return?
If you are able to contribute to an IRA and you're within the right income level, the contribution, if it is a traditional IRA, is a deduction on your tax return, which you would want to claim the deduction for it. If it is a Roth IRA, it's not deductible because it's after-tax money. So it depends on what kind, and for the year that you put it in, if it's traditional, you would want to include that dollar amount as a deduction on your tax return.
All right.
Right. That's a one-line thing, but there's no separate form or schedule or anything, yeah?
There is no form or schedule. You can put it on that line as long as it's fully deductible. There are worksheets to decide if your income is higher above the limits, that it might not be fully deductible, that you might have to do a worksheet to make sure that there's no phase.
There you go, Jack. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. The alternative minimum tax exemption amounts have been increased for inflation for 2019. I don't know. I don't think we've covered that yet, or did we?
No, we didn't cover AMT. There are, and the exemptions went up technically in 2019. That's when the 2018. That was when the big change was. Many, many fewer people pay alternate minimum tax now. because they have changed the income, the adjustments that go into it, because of the Schedule A changes that were big in 2018. We don't have miscellaneous 2% items. We don't have taxes above $10,000. And we don't have mortgage interest that is not other than to buy, build, or renovate your home. So those were big adjustments that went into AMT income. And so that, together with the fact that they increased the exemptions and increased the phase-out range, so many, many people that paid AMT in 17 did not pay it this in 18 and will not in 19.
All right. Greg in Mineral Point, hello.
Hey, Larry. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
So my wife is a Wisconsin State employee, and we purchased back some years of retirement. And we paid, cash out of our private funds to do that. So is there any tax benefit on that money that was spent? And then also, is there any talk of, for 2020 and going forward, if they're going to eliminate the $10,000 cap on state and local taxes?
Let me address that one. There is the state and local taxes of $10,000. There is always talk about it. I would not take any, plan anything on it until I see it in writing, because there are two sides. You hear, oh my gosh, this is terrible. But if you had high taxes, in some cases, people were paying AMT as a result and didn't get benefits from that. So it's kind of a juggle whether they'll do anything about it. One thing to remember with these tax changes, there is a sunsetting date. And the Tax Act, with regard to the $10,000 and the mortgage interest changes and standard deduction, they all sunset as of 12/31/2025. So Congress will have to do something about it by then, or everything will go back to the way it was, as far as a lot of the personal changes. So I don't know that they're ever going to get around to that.
Yeah, probably not. Well, they're not going to get around to it for a while, that's for sure. Mary, I tell you what, it's been a great pleasure to have you with us today. Thank you so much, and I hope we have I'm sure we'll have a chance to do this again. Really look forward to it. Thank you.
You're very welcome.
Mary Mellum, tax professional from Green Bay. She and her husband David operate Ashwaubenon Tax Professionals. We'll have her back and do this again. Appreciate having her with us. And I thank you so much for listening in today. I appreciate you, all the good questions that we have, and I hope you'll stay with us right through the afternoon. Lots more in store. I'm Larry Mehler.